Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Yankee Stadium.
There's a drive hit the deep right field. That ball is going. Boy, it is gone. Jesus Christ, the glory. No, I don't believe it.
That ball is high. It is far. It is gone.
Hey, what up, Yankee fans? Welcome to the Bullpen Betty Show. Lock it in and we'll catch you up on the past week in Yankee baseball. We'll marvel at Alfonso Soriano's offensive explosion and give you the blow-by-blow on the shots absorbed by Alex Rodriguez, both on and off the field. In this week's interview, we'll talk youth coaching with John and Dan from Dog Eat Dog, then wrap it all up in a big dose of fun. So keep it here, because she's Betty, I'm Gigo, and this is Episode 6 of the Bullpen Betty Show.
Everybody, welcome to episode 6 of the Bullpen Betty Show. I am Bullpen Betty, and I'm on a quest to find a bar or restaurant that's cool, that I can deal with, that I like to watch the game in, because it's not easy to do. Sports bars are bad. But here we are, in stands, the bar sort of kitty corner to Yankee Stadium.
World famous stand.
There's pretty much nobody here, except, is that Mickey Rourke at the end of the bar?
Wait, let him sleep it off. He's my ride home.
Mickey Rourke is your ride home? Jeez. Usually when I go to bars to watch a game, I order iced tea. Every bartender's dream. You know, because you buy one iced tea and usually the rest is free anyhow.
But in New York, they call it the Long Island iced tea.
Yeah, no, not of the Long Island version. Just iced tea, and it's like, you know, they charge it $2 or $3 and then you get, like, endless iced teas for the rest of the day. So I sit there for 4 hours and, like, you know, my bill is $3. It's every bartender's dream.
Every bartender's dream to get that 20% of that $3.
Right, exactly. I give them $3.60. I'm awesome. I, you know, sometimes I give them $4. So you know, this month is a big month because most of the games are in the division, except the beginning of this week was against the Angels. Four games.
Took 3 out of 4. For big games. You know,
they were big games because, you know, the Yankees showed up. The Yankees are the Yankees. And Soriano
was out of his mind.
Was he out of his mind or was he in his mind? I mean,
he was 15 for 22 with 5 home runs and 18 RBIs. 15 for 22.
Is it, so he was batting 2,000?
He was like close to 750, under 750, with 5 home runs and 18 RBIs. Like, he had a good month for a really good player. You know, that's like, that's a month for, like, you know, I was gonna say Cabrera, but damn. That's,
no,
that's,
you can't know.
Cabrera's
even better
than Cabrera,
that. Cabrera did that last inning. Yeah, he, so sorry, you know, it's amazing, and, I feel like he was just, you know, dying to play for the Yankees, and so he's just so happy to be back.
Part of it had to do with his finally hitting his 2,000th hit, and that took a lot of pressure off him. But you may be right. I think he likes playing with the Yankees. He likes being in a pennant race. He likes. I mean, you won't go from Chicago, who never wins, so all of a sudden you're in. I mean, we're not in a great position, but we have a chance, you know.
Right. Well, and if he keeps hitting like this, you know.
Well, he did keep up that hitting, right? Right into the Boston series on Friday night.
He did. I was sure that it was going to be a disaster because Pettit was pitching, but he did pretty well. What did he stand for, like 6 1/3 or 2/3?
Right, only gave up, I think, 3 earned runs.
Right.
Good.
Him. This
right.
Season.
Soriano, another home run, 2 RBIs.
Right, so he kept up his the trend of being an amazing hitter until, I don't know, pretty much the next day, I guess, right? Saturday's game, Kuroda, which I was like, hooray! And then he didn't do so great. They kind of shelled him. Well, and then we lost.
So who cares if Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, no, Friday and Saturday matters not.
Right, we split, you know, 1-1, so basically Yankees have to win series all the rest of the way out, right?
Yes.
So big game for us, and wow.
That was the best game of the year. For sure. Why? The only thing that it wasn't the best is we weren't there. But it was the best game of the year for two main reasons. One is that we won, and winning is everything. And
right.
Two, it was the most entertaining damn game ever. It definitely was. I mean, so, you know, A-Rod comes up, and I mean, every time he's up there, I've never heard such loud boos, like, ever on, from TV. Maybe it's because the stadium's sort of, you know, small.
Yeah.
It is just relentless, right? So, so he gets up there, and Dempster, I mean, he clearly was trying to hit the guy from the first pitch when he threw behind him.
Right. Everybody got the message then.
Right, and then, like, so if it was an accident, like, then it would have been a couple of more, like, normal, or maybe an outside pitch, even.
Or
so, you know.
Intentional. You got your one intentional pitch, right? You got your shot.
Right. You missed him, but the message was clear. He had to jump out of the way. In fact, I thought he was hit that first pitch. The way he had to, like, skip out. Then he got two inside pitches, and then he was like, you know what, I just gotta nail this mother. Like, just right in the arm.
Right.
And so what happens? The ump comes out, warns both teams, warns the benches, and of course, thank God, Joe went berserk.
Right, because he wanted Dempster ejected on the spot.
He should have been. So who gets ejected? Joe.
Like they got to do something, or it could get ugly for A-Rod. It'll open season for them.
Well, I mean, I guess it didn't matter so much that Joe wasn't there because they won anyway. But then Gardner came out to, like, I don't know, go beat the hell out of somebody.
He was ready to fight.
And Cano had to, like, grab him, which was a good move because if Gardner had gotten thrown out, he wouldn't have hit that base-clearing triple.
Right, exactly. And then even better is when A-Rod came up, right?
Right. So, like, what, two at-bats later?
Two at-bats later.
He came up and he answered the nail. With a home run. And that was a monster home run.
He crushed that to center field. I mean, that was...
It way in the seats. That wasn't just, like, blooping over the wall.
It was nice. I mean, he liked it. You can tell he enjoyed it. You know?
Yeah. Well, did you see... He was kind of saying something when he was running around the bases.
Yeah.
And then I saw them interview him later. And he's like, nah, I didn't say anything. He's handling it, man, really well. I mean, he's a professional sociopath. And, you know, that's... It works for you and it works against you.
It was so blatant what Dempster was trying to do. The reaction he made, A-Rod almost looked like a good guy, you know?
The class act,
right? I mean, he made him a sympathetic figure.
Yeah, I mean, God, whatever. I just have to suspend my morals. Because, I mean, A-Rod's a rat, we think, right?
Well, it's out there. It's a possibility. But he's all right. You know? As long as he's got the uniform, as long as he's allowed to play. I mean, I'm sure that's how his teammates are looking at him. I'm sure they all don't love him. They all don't want to, you know, go out to lunch with him or whatever. When he was on the field, when he got hit, I know every one of those players had his back. Every one of the Yankees had his back. They know they need him to make a run.
Right. I mean, we finally have a lineup.
Right. It's either him or David Adams, you know?
Lillybridge.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They need him for the game. But what a bummer that, like, you need such a guy. But, I like I said, I have to suspend my morals. Not because I want to become an amoral or immoral person, but because...
Too late.
But because it's entertaining, frankly. But I just wonder if A-Rod was not a good-looking guy. If I would just be like, send him up the river. I don't know. I mean, he is kind of hot in his own sort of dumb jock way, you know? He's got the New York Yankee look. You know, I have that, my thing about they have to sort of look like movie stars or whatever. He does. And impressed with his public speaking abilities under so much duress.
English and Spanish. Speaks very good Spanish.
Yes, isn't that interesting now? He's speaking Spanish. He pretends practically like his whole life like he's not even Spanish. And now he has to embrace the whole Spanish community because they're probably the ones who support him the most.
Actually, the first time I heard him speak Spanish was when he did his introductory press conference with the Yankees. I was like, oh, look at that. He does speak Spanish.
Right, yeah. He sort of doesn't have that going for him. And I've heard stories from, you know, the Uptown guys about how he sort of shunned the Dominican community at some point. Yeah, that was kind of the word on the street. But I think the Dominicans are forgiving people, especially when you're kicking ass.
He was thanking them for their support when he got suspended.
Yep, he's gonna be like Ichiro or Kuroda. He's gonna get a translator and only speak Spanish pretty soon.
Baseball been very, very good to me.
La pelota. and I just wanted to point out that Granderson's batting around 280. Thank you.
Okay.
No, just because I read things and I hear people like, oh, you know, he strikes out all the time and he only bats 225. And I'm looking and I'm like, I don't know, man. I feel like his batting... has changed this year. I mean, I know he hasn't played a lot, but he's not, you know, blasting home runs every game, but he's also not striking out like every time he's at the plate.
I'm telling you, I would take 280 and 30 home runs over 220 and 40 home runs.
Right.
Like 280 and 30 home runs, you're kidding up. You're good. You're really good.
Right.
You know, and that's better. We don't need the 40. I mean, I guess you could always use 40 home runs, but...
Right. If you're Cabrera, then I'll take it. Right. But Cabrera doesn't use performance-enhancing drugs, does he?
Well, not that we know of. His issue has been alcohol, right? I think some DUI.
Really? Rubbing alcohol?
Yeah, he might be drinking that too. I don't know.
Vanilla extract?
He had a couple of alcohol-related incidents, if I'm not mistaken.
Did he really?
Isn't he the one who got into an argument in front of some hotel?
I have no idea.
Here in New York, and wasn't he the one with all the anti-Semitic comments?
No! It was a Tiger, but it wasn't Cabrera. I can't remember.
Fielder. Him.
No, it wasn't Fielder. It's a guy who's not on the Tigers anymore.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I forget his name, but I, yeah.
All right, so that wasn't him. But still, I know he does. Yeah, he had some alcohol problems.
Well, doesn't everybody at some point? I drink once in a while.
As soon as the show is over, we're going to put some alcohol on that thing.
I still have some Dominican rum that you brought over like 7 months ago.
I have some good stuff.
Yeah, I don't drink at home, and I don't drink out very much anymore. It makes me look and feel bad the next day. It took me 25 plus years to figure that out. So anyway, speaking of 25 years, two guys that I've known for that long, if not, yeah, about that long, John Connor and Dan Nastasi, who are both from the New Jersey hardcore scene, and they're going to come on and talk to us about kids in sports, because they are both coaches of kids sports teams, and I really think this is a great and interesting topic, and it's practically like we have a social conscience on this this podcast by doing this interview. So
practically,
right? I will, and hopefully I'll be taken very seriously after this. So we actually talked to John and Dan a little bit earlier this week, and here's a little bit of what they had to say. Hey everybody, if you listened to the show last week, you may have heard me go off on girls in sports wearing pink. Well, we got a lot of feedback on that, so we're taking it a little further this week, and I have two dudes from the hardcore scene who have gotten into coaching kids, and they're here to talk about, you know, what sports does for kids, and I think this is really important, because even though I was talking about pink last week, my real goal is to talk seriously about kids in sports, because I think it's really, really important for the future generation of this country. So I'm here with the world-famous lead singer of Dog Eat Dog. Hi, John Connor. How are you?
Hi, Ballpen Betty. I'm well.
It's not a ballpoint pen. It's a bullpen.
Bullpen.
Listen.
Shut up, John Connor. So
skateboarding Bettys are like groupies.
Well, that's part of the allure of me.
Oh, okay.
I also have Dan Nastasi, who was also in Doggy Dog, among many other bands. How are you doing, Dan?
I am fantastic. Bullpen Betty.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. So I'm going to get into a little bit more about your guys' background and how I know you personally. But first, I really want to get into this sports thing. So, John, I know that you are coaching a ice hockey team in D.C. Tell me a little bit about that.
When I moved to Washington and I wasn't touring, I wanted to get back into hockey, and I found that there's a rink out here in the hood in Southeast, and got to be a part of a wonderful game that I'm still playing today. We got skates in the morning and stuff. And anyway, it led me to this hockey club that was started in the late 70s by a man called Neil Henderson, and we are currently the oldest minority-run hockey program in North America. And for those of you that are geographically challenged, that means Canada too. So,
how old are the kids?
We go from 7 years old up until 17 when they graduate high school. We're part of USA Hockey. The NHL created their diversity, or now it's called Hockey is for Everyone, based on our program as the paradigm. So it was a no-brainer for me once I got involved. I got hooked. It helped me become a better player, just learning the USA hockey program. And I'm having a lot of fun playing a game I love and passing it on to some kids that are in Washington. So it's real cool.
So how have you seen these kids, you know, change or evolve through the program, not only playing, but just like in their lives or the confidence that they have?
One of the things that we're most proud of with the Fort DuPont Cannons is we make sure that our kids are going to school, getting good grades. We're not here to develop NHLers. We're here to make sure we're developing individual and young men and women too. I heard you mention women in sports.
Yep.
And I'm a big proponent of girls playing hockey. I think it's can be a physical game for kids to play, but not overly physical like football.
Right.
And girls often, you know, they become more dexterous and they have better ability younger than boys do. So I see girls out there, they're doing pretty well on skates, and it's cool to see.
So speaking of football, though, Dan, you are the football coach.
I am a football coach. I'm not the football coach.
Well, in this in this conversation, you are the football coach.
Yeah, like,
tell us a little bit about what you do.
I'm a product of my 6-year-old son came to me one day and said, "Dad, I want to play football." So we registered him for football, and a friend of mine, John Farelli, from in the town that I live. I live in River Edge, New Jersey. I went to go register him, and he's like, "Hey, you know, Dan." He's like, "So, are you going to coach?" And I essentially was just drafted to say, "Hey, you know, this guy, at the time, you know, he owns his own business. He has time. Let's get him to coach." You know, so I started with first and second grade boys, and wound up coaching those first and second grade boys up until they were in seventh and eighth grade. So I kind of grew the first 6 years with a group of what became young men. And you know, we grew together. I learned the game as I was trying to teach them the game. You know, by the time my older son Anthony was in seventh and eighth grade, I was given an opportunity to coach high school football. And for a 4-year period, I was coaching high school football and still coaching the seventh and eighth grade kids within the same program at Riverdale.
You know, all at the same time.
Yeah, for 40.
That's a lot of coaching.
Yeah, it really was. You know?
So how do you see like the evolution of these kids? So, you know, John's working with city kids, and you're working with you know, spoiled suburban kids.
We prefer yuppies.
Yuppie kids.
But you're correct, and it's two different sides of the spectrum. I coach in an affluent area, and these kids, a lot of them really have everything that they want or everything they ever needed. And the game of football teaches them things about life that, you know, they do not get maybe from home. You know, and
right.
Absolutely.
I believe that. You know,
so you really see these kids like, you know, mature and come into their own through this?
I look at these kids like, what example for their life can I try to be a part of to make them a better person? And
right.
I'm sure John thinks exactly the same way. You know,
do you, John?
Yeah, I do. And I agree with Dan that sports teach you lessons, and it's not about what we teach them, let's say, as coaches. I think, you know, consistency and treating everybody fairly is part of it, but the actual games, and I know football as like hockey, the game teaches you the lesson. The game teaches you to be teammates. The coaches, we could yell, we could scream, we could have whatever technique we want, but really it's the sport that they're playing, the football, the hockey, the soccer, whatever it is that you have to depend on each other, baseball as well, wrestling, any game like that where you have to depend on your teammates. It teaches you about life, and that's stuff that the coaches can't even impart on you with words or X's and O's.
Everything you do to be part of a team is something that you can take with you for the rest of your life. So I know plenty of kids that I coach that have graduated college that still come back, and I see them, and like I look at them and say, I feel like I had a part of who they are today.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's a positive feeling. You know, it's like, it's a high.
Do you guys feel that sports programs have sort of changed for the, you know, better or worse since we were kids, you know, with parents getting so involved and the whole everyone gets a trophy mentality?
It's not about the trophy. The trophy collects dust. Kids don't care about a trophy. Kids care about being a part of something and feeling like, you know, think just socially. You have a kid. He's a little awkward. That kid doesn't feel like he fits in. He might be insecure. He becomes part of this football team, let's say. Now he's part of the team. He's an equal. He's just like everybody else. I've seen kids come out of their shell. You know, so you have to, as a coach, look at each individual character and say, you know, this kid, he's not fast. He's not, but you know what? He's smart. He's
going to here.
He's going to be in the spot we need him to. We can teach him this skill to make him feel good about himself. And in turn, he's doing something positive for the team.
Well, how have you guys seen parents, like, either help or, you know, destroy what their kids do?
You know, I tell all the parents before the season, contact me about any concern you have about your child and how he feels here, but never contact me about how much your child plays, where he's playing, or anything to do with playing time. And that is the biggest problem with parents right now.
At least in the lush suburbs of Bergen County. Do you have any parents issues, John, on your hockey team?
It's a little different for me because Coach Neal, who runs our program, has been doing it for 35, 36 years, whatever it is now. And he basically says, you know, when your kid comes there, he's mine right now. He's part of our club. Unless you're on the ice as a qualified coach, thank you for being here and watching, but basically keep your mouth shut. And he's like, you know, he's a black dude from Barbados teaching kids hockey. Like, who's going to tell him something?
That's the best thing I ever heard. Oh, my God. Neither of you get paid?
No.
Absolutely not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You're good Catholics.
I mean, listen, for just to touch on that subject for a second as well, your original question about that everyone gets a trophy, and I think don't blame the kids. They just want to play games. When I see kids in the street, they're throwing the football around, they're playing wiffle ball, whatever they're doing, they're having fun, they're setting up their own rules. Sometimes that's the most enjoyment they're ever going to get out of the games. No offense to the coaches or the leagues or anything like that, but I remember growing up, the most fun I ever had playing games was out in the street with my neighbors and all that stuff.
Right, well, that's what I talked about at last episode, about just running crazy like maniacs playing, you know, kicker and reds and blues and water fight, you know, whatever, softball with, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood, and it didn't care if it was girls or boys or anything.
Totally.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever coached girls?
Yeah.
No. One word answer.
I won't even go there, Dan.
I have not.
So, you know, this is actually a baseball show. So John and I used to go to Mets games.
Let go, Matt.
Exactly.
I feel so sorry for you.
And we would go because what would we spend? We would just drive to the stadium and pay $9 or something.
Party.
And Shea Stadium was a dump.
And sit in the last row.
About it.
Exactly.
Right.
I was talking to Howie Abrams, who you both also know.
How nice.
Strange. About, you know, why. I tried to equate metalheads liking the Mets, but he told me it was just because it was the 80s. So, were you an actual Mets fan, or was it just because, like, it was the 80s? Or did you hate the Yankees, or did you not even think about it back then when we went to those games?
I originally liked the Yankees until Thurman Munson died.
Right.
And for some reason, I don't know, he was my favorite Yankee somehow along the lines. Probably because my mom always, like, follows the Mets. That was her team.
And just like my mom.
Yeah, she got me into it. So it was also, I mean, we could have gone to Yankee games with Greg's pass, but we always wanted to go to the Mets games because it was like dirtier and like there was airplanes flying over. It was just chaotic. I don't know, something about
shit.
And could do bad things up in the last row, which I won't name what those bad things were because it's a family show.
It wasn't only me.
You know, I did go to Yankee games with somebody whose name I will not mention, but you'll know who I'm talking about because we would go in his mother's white Cadillac.
Oh.
Anyway, well, let's not get into specifics of that. But
hey, listen, remember, the Mets got the last laugh on that one because Citi Field is the nicest stadium.
Nice.
Other than Camden Yards, Wrigley, and Fenway, Citi Field is a home run, and the new Yankee Stadium is pitiful. It is just...
You know, that's funny. Everybody's got different opinions on that.
Hey, if you want to talk about wax stadiums, too, I'm not that big of a fan of the new MetLife or whatever it is.
That's awful. It looks like a metal ring or something.
Wait, which stadium are you talking about?
The Jets and Giants.
I don't even play in... I've never even been to an NFL game, ever.
All right, now we got a problem.
I've been to college games. I went to the Rose Bowl, but I've never been to an NFL game. But, you know, the other thing that I wanted to get into is not only is John the lead singer of Dog Eat Dog, but he is... You're home briefly, right? You're in the middle of a European tour?
On and off, yeah.
But don't you also drive a Zamboni, which is secretly what every guy in the world wants to do?
Any guy with real dreams, anyway. Yeah, I drive a Zamboni. My day job, I work for a company called Guest Services, and I manage recreation properties. So basically, I run a boathouse in the summer, and then in the wintertime, I am the general manager for the ice rink at the National Gallery of Art Sculpture Garden.
John has been on tour, and you've played in front of, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people at a time.
Correct.
And I never really hear about that or see anything, but you were on, like, the local news in D.C. driving the Zamboni, and you told me about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been a rock star for, like, I don't know, 20-something years now in one way or another, or at least playing in bands. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of need to promote yourself at this age or level anymore. Either people are with it or they're not.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm cool with that.
I could argue that you are one of the original corruptors of Bullpen Betty, John. So the first time I ever went to CBGB's was with John Connor. And what band did we see? Do you remember?
Living Color, maybe.
That's exactly it. And then ever since then, it's been, you know...
Human Chef.
What was that? Was that a Murphy's Law show, or was
no,
that Fishbone?
Fishbone.
At the old Ritz.
Yeah.
So, John, what you're going back out to Europe?
2 weeks from today, yeah.
And who are you playing with?
I have no idea.
Yourself? Are you playing with yourself? Stop playing with yourself, John.
I'll be playing my ukulele with myself in my hotel room.
Where are you going?
We are going to Germany, England, Holland, Belgium, Czech Republic. I think that's it. We just got back from Russia. It was our first
time.
Wow.
How was that?
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was definitely eye-opening. I have, like, I have a crush on Russia right now.
A crusha?
I have a crush.
A crusha. Okay, well, you guys are terrific and cool, and I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing for the kids, man.
Yeah. Kids are doing it for us. I mean, they're keeping me and Danny young and keeping us in games we love. And, I mean, like he said, he learned how to coach on the fly, but became... you know, it became a huge part of his life, and me too. Like, I didn't think I was gonna coach for 10 years or whatever. I just wanted to try it.
Right.
And it just became something really cool. And he loves the game of football. I love the game of hockey. You know, we're passionate about it. You love the game of baseball. You're doing your show. And, we really, we wish you well, Bimbo Betty.
That's the nicest thing you ever said to me. We'll have more of John Connor later on when he announces his pick for walk-off song of the week. But right now, we want to talk about what's coming up this week in the wonderful world of baseball.
And like I say every week, apparently, it's a big week coming up. Every week.
I know, right now, every week is a damn big week.
Every game's a playoff game, or it should be.
Yeah, that's, you know, who said that?
A-Rod
said that. So, yeah, so Toronto's coming up.
4 games in 3 days.
Right, because one of them is a makeup game that we're going to because it was rained out on my birthday weekend.
That's right. I forgot it was your birthday. So we're going to the early game of a day-night doubleheader.
Right.
Where are we sitting?
Oh, where are we? We're sitting in the
bleachers.
The bleachers.
Look for us in the bleachers. We'll be the people with the equipment. You saw me a mic in a hand.
Right, because I'm sure they'll let me bring a boom mic into the stadium. We'll probably be the only people out there. Like, who's going to the rain delay makeup game at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday?
Right.
Should we wear like pink afro wigs or something?
No, pink's not allowed.
Oh right, God. Well, an afro wig is different than a baseball hat. Yeah, so we're going to be there, and
hopefully,
you know,
I wish we'd been able to get in touch with Joey Bautista.
Oh, maybe since nobody will be at the game, or I'm assuming that we can just like yell. I'll just yell out into. I'll be
see if we can get that
doing.
Get that interview at the fence.
maybe I could just can I be like, hey Bautista, and just interview him like screaming.
Yeah, let's try that. See if it works.
All right, so we'll wait till the end, near the end of the game.
Nice,
but it doesn't matter so much. So there's that, and that's exciting, and then Tampa. Then it's all division games.
That's the one thing I got going for them. There's a lot of division games over the next month and a half.
We could advance like crazy, or we could fall way behind. So
I guess that's one of the good things about that second wild card spot. But it gives a team, even a team like the Yankees, have hope.
So were you somebody who was against the whole wild card thing?
Oh, yeah. But then...
It grew on you?
Grown on me, you know. The Yankees made their first wild card team in 95. And it'll definitely help them this year.
What was your original reason for not liking it?
Too much playoff time. Right. I mean, they just last too long. I mean, it's not as bad as, like, I think basketball playoffs last, like, 3 months. You know, or hockey where, like, two-thirds of the teams get in. You know?
Speaking of hockey, not only is John Connor the lead singer of Doggy Dog, and more importantly, a Zamboni driver, but he was my senior prom date.
True.
I'm going to drive that one into the ground until we're both dead. So,
That prom picture is dynamic.
Right.
I mean,
maybe we'll even put the prom picture on Bullpen Betty.
Yeah, we're shining.
It was sort of like the rock and roll high school.
So, we were stunting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, they were like playing the Ramones, and you guys were like slamming, and the teachers were like, "What is this?" They were a little behind the times, though.
Yeah, don't play the Ramones if you don't want to see slam dancing.
This is your big moment. This is the biggest moment of your life. You get to pick the walk-off song of the week for Bullpen Betty. And what do you pick and why?
I am picking Murphy's Law Fun. Because right around the time that we started hanging out and our crew, this was our anthem, or one of them anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's simple, gets right to the point. It's, you could put fun towards anything in life. It could be sports related, party, whatever. Wherever you are, you want to have fun. I mean, do it like Jimmy said. Gotta have fun.
And thanks everybody for listening. We'll yell at you next week.
But in the meantime, they should follow us, right?
Right. So there's really been some great back and forths on the Facebook page, Bullpen Betty's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/bullpenbetty. There are Yankee fans who are very pro as well as very con A-Rod, so that makes for some interesting. And then every once in a while, I've got my stupid Red Sox fan follower.
blow him up. What's his name?
Yes.
Public shaming.
Matthew Dunn, also known as Matt Dunn, also known as Matty. He is another guy from high school, and he grew up in New Jersey, and for some mental illness related reason, he's a huge Red Sox fan, but it's all in good fun, and I kind of have to be nice to him because he's a golf pro, and he told me he'd teach me how to play golf this summer, so I gotta get over.
Golf, but all the ball players playing in New York
right down in Florida or whatever.
Or wherever.
They probably don't play in, like, you know, Chicago, because there's a lot of snow. I'm just wondering where Curtis plays golf. That's what I'm...
So, besides Facebook,
they can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/bullpenbetty. They can find us on Podomatic, which is the podcast page, which is bullpenbetty.podomatic.com.
Podomatic.
Yes.
Podomatic.
And that's connected to iTunes. We're also on iTunes. So when that updates, if you are an iTunes subscriber, it will automatically update. Then our website, which is not very robust, but it's Bullpen Betty, and Betty is with a Y, by the way, bullpenbetty.com, has a link to the Podomatic page as well as a link to Facebook and a link to Twitter. And it's got a big, giant picture of... You know, yours truly, so...
In the future, that'll
be... I think you should put it as your wallpaper. everyone. Well, Geico and I have spent our night drinking iced teas at Stan's. And we're excited for the week coming up, and we can't wait to talk at you guys again next week. Thank you. The Bullpen Betty Show. Good night.